Welcome to the Source Refresh Small Business Supply Chain Podcast. I'm your host, Chandrika Venkatraman. Join me as I talk to small businesses from across the world to learn about their supply chains, their support systems, and what keeps them moving.
I'm excited to sit down with Tom Mills today, Head of Procurement and Properties at Bibby Financial Services in England. Tom is a leading influencer in the world of procurement and offers free procurement advice through his Procurement Bites Substack. Tom, we're so excited to talk to you today because you're our first procurement guest, believe it or not. You are the procurement protagonist, and your experience ranges from food and beverage to fashion and apparel and financial services. Just share with us what all these years in procurement across all these different industries have taught you.
Wow, that's a big question to start with. Firstly, thank you so much for having me on. I still can't get over the word influencer because that's not how I see myself, but it's flattering to hear that anyway. You mentioned the number of industries that I've worked across, and I do think that what I've learned is just how transferable procurement is as a skill set. Quite often, I think back to my buying in my early career and think, I'm still using very similar techniques that I learned then in my day-to-day today. So I think that's the number one point, is that procurement is one of those truly transferable skills, and it's one of those things where all experience is good experience. And the other thing is slightly unique for my career versus some other procurement professionals is that I've kind of had a split career between direct and indirect buying. So I've been the buyer, but I've also been more recently in a procurement role where your primary effectiveness is driven by how good you are influencing the internal stakeholder. So I think both having the experience of being a buyer has really honed my negotiation skills. Being in procurement or in the indirect space has really honed my influencing skills. And I think that natural blend is really important for a good procurement professional.
I think that's very well said. You know, you've obviously spent a lot of time across many different organizations. What, according to you, is the difference between the procurement approach taken by an established business versus one that's just starting out?
So that's really to the heart of where I feel that my experience has really played out well within my career, because I actually started out at the cooperative group in Manchester, England, whereby it was a really professionally run corporate organization, big contracts that I was dealing with. You know, I was dealing with the likes of Coca-Cola, GSK, Britvic. You know, it was really, there were several layers of kind of support, and effectively the frameworks and the policies and the ways of doing things were all very well thought out and structured from the start. The other thing is that, I mean, even 20 years ago when I was starting, they had really good systems and technology to underpin what you do. If you move into a smaller organization, for example, my current one, Bibby Financial Services, you're more likely to have very little technology investment in the procurement space. So you're going to have to be getting your hands a bit dirtier, dealing with even things like kind of manually uploading contracts, making sure that you've got a central database of items that will enable you to get a good view of. There's a lot more heavy lifting that's required. But the other thing is, culturally, you're more likely to find inconsistencies in terms of the way people work. Now, that's not saying that small businesses are necessarily worse than big businesses when it comes to procurement and buying. It's just that there'll be pockets of inconsistency and potentially more risk. So I think the opportunity for smaller businesses to really improve their procurement framework is really massive. But the opportunity for people like myself, and there's many others like me who have the experience of working in a bigger environment versus a small environment, is you can use your experience and skill set, and it's hugely valuable and powerful when you go into a smaller organization. Does that kind of answer the question?
Absolutely, it does. So, you know, talking about, you know, being light on resources, either human resources or technology or financial, what challenges do they really translate to, you know, in terms of a business challenge, because procurement is underfunded, if you will? Like, what does that really, how does that really impact?
Yes, a really good question. So there's obviously a kind of governance question, because effectively, if you've not got the really clear ERP system or a kind of really good, well structured P2P system, then there's going to be risks in terms of the fact that you're reliant far more on the behavior of individuals, because you haven't got the systems to underpin to kind of protect the business. So I think there's a lot more actually influencing that's required in the smaller organizations to make sure that people understand procurement, understand good procurement, and understand why procurement needs to be there. So I actually thrive in that environment, because I would say if I was to kind of pick one thing that I feel I do well and that I feel I enjoy, it is the influencing. So I think that one of the things, when you mentioned me as an influencer, and I'm coming around to that idea now, is that every interaction you have with a stakeholder, it's about leaving a positive impression, but an impression that says you're here to help. You're here to help them buy. You're not here to be the spend police. You're here to help them buy better. And actually, by using procurement in whatever guise you use us, we will make sure that the likelihood of spend regret is far diminished. And drawing back to that point on positive experience as well, I'm deeply fascinated by psychology. So I'm always of the view that, you know, it almost matters less what you say. It's more about the impression you leave. So I always like people to leave whatever conversation I have with them with a positive impression of me and procurement. And that's not from an egotistical point of view, but it's from I want that person to come back to me in a couple of weeks' time and feel like they want to talk to me and come to me for advice. So I have to admit, I can't remember the original question, Chandrika, but I may have gone off on a tangent. But
you did answer it really well, because, you know, when we talk about key challenges with small businesses and procurement, people usually talk, including myself, right? We usually hone in on costs, right? Yeah. Cost risks. We hone in on, you know, profitability and, you know, the financial aspect of it. You touched something that I also believe it's not very openly talked about, or it's not very widely talked about, is risk, right? Yeah. So you're talking about procurement, right, as a risk mitigation function, right? And you touched upon 100%. Governance risk. So I think you covered that. Now, you know, just shifting gears to, you know, to help a listener understand how this actually translates to a financial term, right? How have you seen, from your own experiences, how have you seen procurement make an impact on a small business's top line or bottom line? Can you share
us maybe? Oh, one? Yeah. Fantastic. So I've actually just published an article today, and I'm not trying to plug my ProcureByte Substack, but just about value reporting and the different ways that we should be reporting value as a function. But just reflecting on the journey that I've had within my current role, I came in at the time that the business was frankly in a bit of a turnaround situation, because it had a history of some poor investments. They'd had some challenges post the COVID situation in terms of client retention, etc. And so my primary focus at that point was actually on saving the business some money, and it was purely, you know, a lot of it was tactical negotiations, looking at the current contract spend, looking at where we could reduce costs, or where we might have duplication of service, where there might be opportunities to automate to save money, you know, all of the classic traditional procurement measures. But that's what's been fun about my current role, is that that's really transitioned now, because we're in a transformation phase where we're looking now to invest in new technology and systems to really engage the customer and to drive sales. So lots of the primary project topics that I've been focused on recently, and we mentioned one just before we went live on this, Chandrika, is that I've been responsible for running the RFP process, procuring the right vendor with the stakeholders, and making sure that we've got the right contractual protection, which will ensure that we drive our revenue. Now, the reason I mention that is that's effectively new spend. That's new spend that the business is decided to invest in. And I think what's sometimes underplayed within the procurement role is how much of value we can add in new investments to making sure that those will help the sales journey. So I know that I'm confident that some of the technology procurement that I've recently been involved in will ultimately lead to a better business, better customer service, more revenue, more sales. It's not typically the type of thing that procurement departments or teams track. But if you're allied with a business in those types of spend areas, then you have truly got it in terms of you delivering mature procurement. And it's been exciting, actually, because the template that I've kind of been able to embed within my current business, I feel is probably replicated or could be replicated in many other businesses. You have to see procurement as a journey, and there's a maturity model. And I always set out when ever business I join, I say, first 90 days, right, where are we now as a procurement function? Where do we need to get to? So what's the vision state for the business? What are the steps that need to be taken to get there? And I always very visually lay it out, and I make sure that I get exec buy-in to that. Yes, the reason I'm saying that is it wouldn't work to just go straight into an organization to say, right, where's your biggest investment? I want to get involved. You almost have to kind of prove yourself, build the foundations, build the steady base, make sure that the business is in a good shape from a contract, from a spend, from an OPEX spend point of view. And then you can really get yourself in that seat in the big investments and really start to drive value. Hugely passionate about it. Chandrika, I'm going to continue because there's just one other thing I want to mention. I'd be hugely passionate about driving other goals within the business, so social goals, things like diversity, things like governance around things like modern slavery, data privacy, making sure that we're mitigating risk, but also thinking about environment and sustainability. And while that's not typically, again, something that procurement can necessarily holistically claim as kind of savings, because it's not about that, I do think that procurement has an increasingly fundamental role in making sure that we've got the good frameworks in place to make sure that we're buying well from that perspective as well. So procurement is so exciting. We're at the cutting edge of kind of some really big changes and shifts in terms of businesses. And I think that the procurement teams that really understand that are going to be the ones that thrive over the next 5 years.
Absolutely. You know, just talking about small businesses, right? Again, another actionable question, right? Which is negotiating when you're a small player is hard, right? We know that. Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure you're living it day in and day out. What actionable tips can you provide to, you know, our listeners to level the field a bit more? What have you done in your role?
Fantastic point. And it's been really pertinent in my current role, because we're very much a niche business in a relatively niche industry with very niche options. There's just a few things that I would say on this. And one thing I mentioned at the start, I'm hugely into the psychology of negotiation first and foremost. And one of the things that I would say is I always come back to the point that all negotiation is effectively in negotiation is effectively perceived. You know, power is never an animate object that you can measure. It's about perceived power. So I do think that there's a lot that you can do from a negotiation point of view that can change the game on that. I'll give an example. You know, there might be a time when you're not aware that you actually do have a power dynamic in the market. For example, a supplier may well need to get into your line of business or to get you as a client for the route into the market that it gives you. Another, if I flip that, I believe in the importance of integrity and honesty within negotiation. So what I mean by that is nothing wrong sometimes if you've got the right supplier dynamic to show your cards and say, look, we are small, we don't have a lot of power here, but we don't want the relationship to start diminished. So we want to make sure that we're getting a fair deal here. So almost being really open and honest. The other thing is, I always believe that no matter how small you are, there's always a way through procurement, or very often a way to drive some competitive tension within the process. So it's very rare that you're in a situation where you're going to be negotiating with just one single option. And I think that's one of the great powers of using procurement, is that procurement can know what the dynamics of the market are to make sure that there's several options, which then gives you that competitive field against which you can be sure that you're getting the best deal. Now, when it comes to that question, when you're talking about some of negotiating with perhaps some of the really big technology firms, or I'm thinking, you know, Microsoft or SAP or whoever, then I understand that you might think, well, we're so small here that what value can I add? I would say there's still a lot that you can do in terms of getting really good visibility and control. So for example, control might be being very clear on the number of licenses that you need at renewal, making sure that there's flexibility in terms of true ups and true downs when you're negotiating those license agreements. Also, talking in a way that talks about your future growth, kind of investing in the relationship in that way that makes the bigger companies want to still work with you and give you a good deal. Honestly, Chandrika, I could probably do a whole podcast on it because it's what I'm hugely interested in. But this, I've rarely been in a situation, I can barely think of one, where I've actually thought, oh, there's nothing we can do here. You know, there's always ways, is my view.
I couldn't agree more. You know, you're doing a phenomenal job, along with many other influencers, on educating leaders and businesses about the relevance of procurement. Is fractional procurement leadership a win-win solution for small businesses that need the expertise, but that possibly cannot afford full-time executives? What's your take?
Well, actually, could you explain the term fractional procurement leadership? Because I've not heard that.
Absolutely. So a fractional leader is someone who devotes a fraction of their time at a fraction of the cost on your business. So essentially, a fractional executive would probably be assisting multiple clients, think of it as a consultant, but a leadership consultant. So the idea is, your business already should have people who can do the day-to-day execution. A fractional leader steps in to provide strategic direction to your team, right? And they work part-time for your organization.
Yeah, absolutely. Got it. I thought that was what you meant. I just, I think sometimes culturally there's terms that we use, which I don't know if it's culture. It might be an American term. It might be just one that I've not come across. I'm always coming across terms in procurement that I'm having to look up. It's a no-brainer, right? For small businesses, it's like that would be game-changing. I mean, I have to say, I've come into small businesses and like my current one, whereby I've had to set up a procurement function. But I can see that if a business can't afford to have a full-time procurement team or head of or procurement manager, then why wouldn't you want to, for a fraction of the cost, invest in that experience to bring in to make sure that you devise a strategy and to help deliver better procurement within your organization? The other reason I think it's an absolute game changer is you're literally accessing like multiple experience from across different clients. You're almost getting the best of breed because you're getting someone who's probably likely to have a number of different clients, even live clients, who can kind of make sure that they apply that knowledge and learning, obviously protecting confidentiality of the businesses, but bringing it all together. So I'm really interested in that concept, not just from a point of view of, you know, if I was ever in that situation of needing to bring in support, but even from my own experience, I think that's something I'd be really good at as well. So
I can totally see that.
Yeah, so you've opened up something there. Not that I'm looking to leave my current business, but
something to consider, right, for the future. You know, yeah. Just park it there.
Park it. Yeah, it's definitely an idea. I think most procurement people, by the way, just flipping that to what that could mean for procurement individuals, we love the interaction. And by the way, you can be an introverted and love the interaction as well. You know, this isn't just about extroverted people who like going out and meeting people, but we love the variety. We love it's the human relationship part of it, and also the getting to understand and learn different things. So I think there's huge advantages on both sides, both for the procurement individual, but also for the business. It's an absolute no-brainer. And to be honest, one of the things that I always find surprising is just how many businesses just plow on without any type of procurement. And it's probably the single easiest thing to address, because if you think about it, you know, procurement, you're dealing with known quantities. You know what you're spending, you know what you're going to spend. But when you're in sales, you kind of, a lot of sales is aspirational, and it depends on lots of external market factors. But the one thing that you can really control is what your spend is and how much value you get out of it. So I just think so many businesses are missing a trick. And I said at the start of this conversation that procurement is just such a transcendent role. So what I mean by that is you can apply your learnings anywhere. Transcendent isn't the word, but you know what I mean. You can literally it's a transferable skill, and it's one that is hugely powerful to businesses. So
I mean, it's a hugely impactful function, right? When done the way it's supposed to be done.
Yeah,
absolutely. So you know, just talk about a little bit more about this whole fractional procurement as a solution, right? What would you look for if you were to hire a fractional procurement executive for your business?
Yeah, so I'd want someone who can kind of come in quite quickly, analyze the opportunity, deliver quickly some strong relationships within the business. So you might say, well, hang on, they don't need to because they're not here long term. But coming back to my point on procurement is influencing. You'd want them to come in with the credibility of a kind of a knowledge from previous clients or previous businesses they've worked in, which you can kind of draw on, but build that credibility with stakeholders. And don't underestimate just someone who's kind of gonna challenge the business, because I think that sometimes businesses don't know what they don't know, and I think the advantage of having someone come in from a fractional leadership perspective is that there's more likely to be that challenge and that kind of maybe pushing the boundaries than if you're already working in the corporate environment and you feel like you have to deal with the hierarchy and you have to kind of, I think people become quickly institutionalized, and that's one of the dangers, right, of staying at a business for a long time, because you end up almost losing that kind of edge. I think fractional leadership, you're going to have someone who's literally at the front end of procurement, who's literally got so much experience and can just bring it straight to the fore and challenge without fear and without bias or prejudice, and I think that's going to be key. The final thing I'd add to that is, and it comes back to the relationship piece, I'd want someone that I know is going to be fun to work with, because if they are there for a limited time or for, you know, X days, a month, whatever, you want them to be someone that stakeholders are going to want to call on. So I think just having that kind of that personality and that drive and that challenge is going to be really important.
I love what you just said. So, you know, we will wrap up now. What is the one thing you want to change in procurement in 2023?
Do you know, I've been asked this on a couple of podcasts recently, and I actually struggle with it because it's difficult to find a kind of a one tangible answer, because I think there's so much that needs to change in procurement, and I don't think all of it will happen quickly. One of the reasons I am so active on things like LinkedIn and I am building my own Substack is because I almost want, I'm so frustrated with so many things that are done badly in procurement that I kind of think that there's a lot that we need to do. So I'm trying to trying to influence from that perspective. But you'll want a crisp answer. I think we should really think carefully and potentially drop the expectations when it comes to things like job adverts to have a degree or a SIPS qualification, which is massive in the UK. You know, you sometimes at the leadership level, you've got, it's almost like the key criteria. Now, by the way, that's not to say that I don't think that the SIPS qualification is good or useful. I encourage it within my own teams. It's not to say that I don't think a degree has great power in terms of showing your ability to learn at a deep level. My worry with it, particularly in the procurement world, is I think there's still kind of a lack of diversity and a lack of critical thinking. And I worry at a more societal level whether those types of qualifications are exactly the type of things that just perpetuate the societal norms and are stemming the progress in terms of diversity and inclusion. So I would say just drop them from the job titles, assess the person on the on their ability to be able to do the job and their attitude and their capability. And if they've got a degree, if they've got a SIPS qualification, great, but it shouldn't be a key criteria.
This is really eye-opening, you know, what you just said, because this is such a simple to execute change, right? It's so simple to execute. And I can tell you, I think some of the best procurement people that I have worked, you know, side by side with have not had fancy education. What they've had is a whole load of procurement sensibility. Thank you for pointing that out. I really hope this is something that does change in 2023.
Well, I'm quite pleased with myself because I actually thought of that on the spot. But actually, it's something I have talked about before.
You have.
And it's quite easy to do that. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Tom. Thank you for your time. Thank you for sharing your experience and expertise in procurement. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. You can get more information on today's episode in the show notes or at source-refresh.com/podcast. To hear more episodes, please subscribe to the Source Refresh Small Business Supply Chain Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts from.